The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or non-profit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance are used by the Board to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks within the City's local historic and conservation districts. The Commission cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangement of structures are not within the Board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denyance of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. If you all could turn off your cell phones, and if you are joining us online, please remain attentive and mute your mic until you are called upon to speak. Each commissioner must say their name when you speak and when you vote on an item. Will the commission members present please identify themselves by the record? I'll start over with Kirsten.
Kirsten Connor.
Rebecca Fenwick.
Ann Miller.
Darren Bagley-Heath.
May Bowley.
Okay, thank you. Signposting. Members of the Board receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were any projects not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we will continue to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the Preservation Officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards. Visual compatibility factors and design standards have an apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or a Board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Sir, could you come to the podium and state your name, please, sir?
Joseph Willett for Willett Construction and Design, 216 East Bolton Street.
Okay. And what do you wish to do, sir?
I wish to put it on a regular agenda.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to ask to vote on that be moved, or is it just moved to it? Okay. Can I have a vote to move this to the regular agenda, please?
Rebecca Fenwick, I motion we move number 4, 216 East Bolton Street, to the regular agenda.
Okay.
Do I need to say where on the agenda?
Yeah, probably. Yes, please. First. At the top.
First. Yeah. First item.
Can I get a second for that?
May Bowley second.
Okay, and I'll start over with Kirsten for a vote.
Kirsten Connor approve.
Rebecca Fenwick approve.
Ann Miller approve.
May Bowley approve.
Okay, that motion passes and we'll remove it to the top of the regular agenda. Thank you. Okay, adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt today's agenda as presented?
May Bowley move to adopt today's agenda.
Can I get a second?
Pam Miller, second. Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Miller, approve.
And passes. Okay, now can we...
You have to approve the consent agenda.
Or do we not do that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
So let's go back and can we have a motion to adopt the consent agenda?
May Bowley move to adopt the consent agenda.
Rebecca Fenwick second.
Kirsten Connor approve.
Rebecca Fenwick approve. Ann Miller approve.
May Bowley approve.
Okay. And we've adopted the agenda, right? We've already done that. Okay, now we move on to the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of the previous meeting? Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
Kirsten Connor, motion to approve the minutes.
Ann Miller, second.
Yes,
Kirsten Connor approve.
Rebecca Fenwick approve. Ann Miller approve.
May Bowley approve.
Okay. Next on the agenda, items requested to be removed from the final agenda. Are there any items to be removed? No?
No.
So we can move on from there. And next, request for extension. Are there any items?
You forgot the continued agenda.
Oh, continued agenda. Okay. Yep. Continued agenda. These are the items that have been continued, deferred to the next meeting, or a date certain, or that staff has determined is incomplete at this time. Can I get a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Rebecca Fenwick, I motion to approve the continued agenda.
Kirsten Connor, second.
May, your vote.
May Boley, approve.
Ann Miller, approve. Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Is there a motion to approve the requests of extensions on the request for extension agenda?
May Boley, motion to approve the request for extension agenda.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Ann Miller, approve.
Approve.
Okay, that motion passes. And now we can move on to the regular agenda, which we're going to start with Alton Street, correct?
Chair, I have a question for you, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
If I have to leave at 6 today, is that a problem? If the meeting goes after 6?
If the meeting goes
after 6. Our quorum. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay, well.
Okay. So, with that in mind, we will be looking at time limits as far as public comment and everything today, and having to hold it with a degree of sternness that we don't usually use, and also commission members' comment as well. Thank you. So, moving on to the regular agenda, and we're going to start with, what is it, 218 East Bolton?
If you want to scroll back up to, or read off item 4 here, you can read that off. Yep.
Petition of Willett Construction and Design, 216 East Bolton Street.
All right, so the petitioner is going to come up and ask for a continuance.
So could you identify your name and see it?
Joseph Willett, Willett Construction and Design, 216 East Bolton Street. We are going to need to continue this to the next meeting so that we can get a zoning variance recommendation for the rear setback line on this project.
Okay, we appreciate that. Thank you. So the petitioner is requesting an extension. Could I get a motion to extend it to the next meeting?
We don't need to have public comment or anything like that, right? No. This is Rebecca Fenwick. I motion we continue the petition of Willett Construction and Design, 216 East Bolton, to the next meeting.
May Boley, second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, second. I mean, approve. Ann Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Hey, thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Motion passes. So we're now going to go through the regular agenda as stated on the agenda, starting with the Victorian District, followed by Kyler Brownville, Streetcar, and then Conservation Districts. Let's begin with the staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. The board asks that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and address items only identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have an opportunity to comment with a limit to 5 minutes. The petitioner may also respond to public comment, which is 5 minutes. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested or granted by the chairperson. We will structure board discussion by calling on each board member for 2 rounds of 2 minute comments or less. Board members are not required to comment. So, the first application is, could you put it back up so I can see?
Oh, sorry.
Put it on the agenda. The first application is number 22, petition of Green Line Architecture, 1001 Whitaker Street, demolition of a non-contributing building.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The applicant is requesting approval for the demolition of a non-contributing building located at 1001 Whitaker Street. Built in 1961, 1001 Whitaker Street is an excellent example of the new formalism style of architecture. Designed by Richard L. Eck of Eck Associates in Atlanta, it was built as the IBM Eastern Region office. Another notable person involved was Georgia-born landscape architect Clermont Lee, although it's likely that little of her design exists today. We found landscape plans at the Georgia Historical Society for this building when it was constructed, done by Claire Motley. All right, I'm going to scroll through the staff photos so everybody can see a little bit more of this building. The building is significant for its use of modern materials. It was one of the first buildings in Savannah to feature a modular concrete structural system. It's among the relatively few iconic examples of new formalism in Savannah that exhibit the type of new forms, waffle slabs, new at the time, umbrella shells and folded plates, made possible by the then newly discovered plastic-like qualities of concrete. The building's innovative modern design and structural form, expressed through precast concrete piers and modular waffle slab ceiling, as well as its characteristic parabolic aluminum entry vestibule, which you can see here, and concrete canopied overhangs, set it apart from other local buildings of the period. The IBM Eastern Region office is also significant for its association with architect Richard L. Eck and Eck Associates. A prominent architectural firm in Georgia and throughout the Southeast, Eck Associates Architects was known for its innovative use of structure and strong modern design philosophy, receiving numerous awards for design excellence. Eck designed dozens of buildings throughout Georgia and the southern United States during a career that spanned nearly 50 years. Eck Associates designed a variety of building types for dozens of institutional, commercial, and private clients. A member of the AIA since 1941, Eck was elected to the Georgia, to the College of Fellows by his peers in 1961 in recognition of his outstanding service and contributions to the profession and to society. Richard Eck retired in 1984. The emergence of new formalism as an alternative to the rigidity of modernism occurred simultaneously with Richard Eck's growing reputation during the mid to late 1950s as a leading proponent of modern architecture in the region. Eck's pioneering work with structural concrete during the 1940s, and in particular modular preformed concrete structural systems during the 1950s, helped to bring about the architectural trends that culminated in the brief popularity of new formalism. By the end of the 1950s, Richard Eck and Eck Associates had earned a reputation as one of the most progressive and innovative architectural firms in the Southeast. All right, so regarding the criteria for demolition, any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status prior to the issuance of a COA for demolition. All right, so exceptional importance. Contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one or more of the following criteria, and I'll go through those four criteria. They are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons in our past, embody the distinctive characteristics of a tight period or method of construction, or that represent the work of a master, or that possess high artistic values, or that represent a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinction, and lastly, have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in history or prehistory. All right, so although outside the period of significance, the building is 62 years old and staff finds that it possesses integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feel, and association. Additionally, the building embodies the distinctive characteristics of new formalism and preformed concrete structural systems common in new formalism. The building also represents the work of Richard L. Eck, a master of such architectural style and this method of construction. The ordinance asks if the demolition is required to alleviate an immediate threat, and the applicant did not provide any indication that the demolition is required to alleviate an immediate threat. It also asks that if the applicant has provided evidence sufficient to demonstrate that the application of the standards would deprive the applicant of reasonable economic return or that there's an undue hardship not of the owner's making, and no evidence was provided. In granting a COA for demolition, the Historic Preservation Commission may impose reasonable conditions as will mitigate the negative effects of the demolition. So staff recommends that if the building is approved for demolition, that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings, and that rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. We also received, we received two comments prior to the final agenda being published. And that was a letter from Ellie Isaacs, in opposition to the demolition, and then a letter from the VNA in support of the demolition. And then we also, after the agenda was published, received a letter from Tony Eck from Lord Eck and Sargent in support of the demolition. And then two other letters in opposition to the demolition of all three of the first three buildings on the agenda. And I'm just going to pass those since they weren't on your agenda. Staff is recommending denial for demolition of the non-contributing building located at 1001 Whitaker Street because the criteria for demolition have not been satisfied and because the building qualifies for contributing status under exceptional importance criteria. If the building is approved for demolition, staff recommends that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings and that, and that rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Fellow board members, are there any questions for staff?
I have a question. So this is not the first time this has come before this board, correct?
They applied but then withdrew.
Okay.
Just and for this building.
There was a time when this district was partially being resurveyed, and I know there was an effort to complete that. Can you update us on the status?
The survey is complete. It was sent to the city in March, and we're now working with them to finalize and start a text amendment in the near future.
So. Does that come before this group before going on to council?
It does.
Okay, and it just hasn't made its way yet?
Yep, we have a little bit more work to do.
Okay, thank you.
But the survey is finished.
Unfortunate timing, perhaps. I mean, I wonder, like, what does the survey say? You know, what are the recommendations of that study?
Yeah, we haven't done a recommendation portion. We did a survey report, but it didn't come with a recommendation. The recommendation will be part of the text amendment.
Okay, which will be adjusting the contributing buildings map.
Right.
Correct. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'd like the petitioner to come forward and state their name for the record.
Yeah, anywhere you want.
I don't know if I'm allowed to.
Oh. Mr. Chairman, as long as he's putting things together here, we'll pull that up. Very good. That's perfect. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. My name is Keith Howington with Green Line Architecture. I've been working in the historic district for almost 25 years.
Can you pull that mic up?
Yeah, absolutely. I can bend down too, so sorry about that. So my name is Keith Howington with Green Line Architecture. I have here today to represent the owner's property in this petition, along with some others in the room today. I would like to ask, I know time is respectful today, I realize that I'm the next five on the agenda, so what I would like to do is kind of do an overview of something real quick. It's going to run over my 10 minutes, but I would respectfully ask if I could run over the 10 minutes here, and then I'll give it back to you on the next five. I'll be super brief on the next five, and I can even slow down my 50 minutes there. That would be allowable if you would allow me on this first one round here. So.
Okay, so thank you for your request. I'm going to ask the board if they want to make a motion to accept or deny the petitioner's request.
Since it's my issue, I'll motion that we allot more time for presentation.
Can you say your name, please?
Rebecca Fenwick for this item, 1001 Whitaker.
Thank you.
What kind of time? Can we put a specific? Yeah, we need to do a vote, but we also probably should do a specific amount of time.
What did you say?
I don't
an
know
additional
what he said. No,
10 minutes?
It's going to take about 20 minutes, but okay. I'll give you back the time on the next okay. five. I'm only going to take about, I'll be super brief on the next one, about 5 minutes on the rest.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll run
I think we need to vote.
May Bully second.
Yeah.
Okay,
Kirsten
great.
Connor approve.
Rebecca Fenwick approve.
I just want to kind of give a history.
And Miller approved.
Okay, motion passes. Okay. You get 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you very much. Keith Howington with Greenline Architecture, here to represent the owners and the owner's property. I've been working in the historic district for about 25 years. I served on the historic district board of review for 7 years and was the chairman for 2 of those years. We as a petitioner and we as Greenline do not take this petition lightly. We know what is at stake. So I just want to say that we've given it great consideration. What I would like to do is ask that you, as the Preservation Commission, can look at this with an open mind. And not look at these buildings as personal likes or dislikes and look at them for what they are and what they could be. Okay. So we're here today to talk about a lifetime opportunity, a real lifetime opportunity this city hasn't seen in a while. A project that has been presented to you, the city and the Victoria neighborhood, district, a chance to correct what some consider an urban planning mishap. We are missing a vital corner of Forsyth Park. Okay. Historically, this block has always been underdeveloped. It's strange, but it's true. Creating a hole at the southwest corner of Forsyth Park. Looking at the 1880 maps on the screen, it was vacant. That's reinforced by the Edward Coke 1991 perspective, vacant land. I can't zoom in, but right down there is a vacant land. In the late 1800s to the early 1900s, there's what should be there. Two large, two or three story brick homes that are fitting with the context of the Victorian Historic District. Those are removed to build one story modern buildings. Okay. Looking at a map that we put together, axonometric around the park, you can see from this site section, it's not very hard. We're in the Victorian district and downtown neighborhood district. We have appropriate context. And then we have a missing tooth, a hole in the fabric around Forsyth Park. Looking at the axonometric view here, everything represented in blue is two or more story buildings facing the park as it should be. And we also have very important anchor buildings on the corner. We have the Georgia Historical. We have the SCAD building, that was the previous law school, anchoring the northeast corner. We have the mansion, although it's a large footprint, it's 3-4 stories, and it's broken up very well. You don't realize that building is as big as it is. It anchors the middle of the park. Across the park, we have the Gwinnett Street Apartments, all building anchoring the center of the park. On the southeast corner, we have the Mary Candler Telfair Hospital, and even the American Legion building anchors very strong corner. When we get to the southwest corner, we have a lot of vacant land, a missing hole. We have one-story buildings that are out of place. It's not hard to see on that. Okay. Walking around the park, anchor building, Georgia Historical. I know exactly where I am. I have landmarks all around the park. The SCAD building, former law building at night. I can see the Chatham Apartments peeking through the trees from the middle of the park. It's a landmark. I know where I am. The Gwinnett Street Party building. I know where I am in the park. I always have a landmark. Even in the dark, even in the night, I can see the Mary Candler building because it's peeking through the trees, because it's of the right height, of the right scale, and the right density to support Forsyth Park. When I get to the southwest corner, where the petition is today, at the same time of the evening, it's dark, looks dangerous. I, as a grown man, feel like I might get mugged. That is suburbia. That could be anywhere. It could be in the middle of Alabama. It could be in the middle of Ohio. You don't know where you are. That does not speak about Savannah. That's another view. Same view. Sad, lonely, kind of depressed. Is this what we want on our southwest corner of Forsyth Park? A series of one-story buildings preserved for perpetuity? I don't think so. Not when we have buildings like this on these vacant lots. That could be, again, two- and three-story buildings. Okay? So, but to be clear, we are here today to ask for demolition of a non-contributing buildings. These are non-contributing buildings. They have been historically through many, many surveys and through many, many surveys of the public and through the MPC. Okay? To put it more simply, though, we are here to determine, are these buildings contributing or are they non-contributing? Because there seems to be some confusion. Or are these buildings contributing or are these buildings non-contributing? So this board has truly nothing to lose today, in my opinion. We can't move forward and we won't move forward with any new building until you, the HPC, designs a building. If you approve a demolition today, we wouldn't move forward until you have the overall authority to approve any new building on this site. This building will stay here as it is, and any future development, as again, is contingent upon your approval in the future. You have the final say for the future of this corner of Forsyth Park. With this proposal, I do want to point out on the site map I have on the screen, it's not hard to see. We have a little small 2,500 square foot building that's on the agenda today for 10:15. 2,500 square feet takes 10,000 square feet of parking to support it. We have an 8,000 square foot building at 101 Whitaker Street. This parking doesn't support it. We have to have additional surface parking. That's what we get with these low-lying one-story buildings that are non-contributing. Okay. With this proposal, we have the opportunity to provide a true anchor on the west corner of Forsyth Park, to provide the height and density of this corner that should have, to provide life activity. We have the opportunity to provide office space for three local Savannah-based companies, major companies that are being pushed out of downtown, out of their downtown office space, and they would like to maintain a downtown presence. We have buildings such as the Manger Building pushed out for hotels, other large office buildings pushed out for hotels. Do we want to become a city that is only for tourists? I don't think so. It's a dying prototype. We see it in other big cities where we want to keep the live, work, play atmosphere in downtown Savannah, not just for tourists. Okay. We have the opportunity to provide parking below grade, not only for the offices and whatever development comes on this site, but also for the community during park events and weekends and after hours, okay? And we have an opportunity to eliminate the vacant land for the surface parking that these one-story buildings require. It would be silly for me to stand here and say that the 101 Whitaker Street isn't neat and architecturally attractive. I can see that. It has visual expressions of structure that are attractive, okay? When I moved to Savannah, I came to Savannah to get a preservation degree. That was my first love. I got a preservation degree. And then I also found an interest in architecture. I have restored an 1890s farmhouse that was condemned by the city personally for my family home that I bought from Historic Savannah. I live currently in an 1880s well-restored home. I understand preservation. I respect preservation. But I can also see, I also have the vision to see what's the right thing for this block and what could be here, and bringing the right height and density and scale to this otherwise vacant and depressed corner. Okay. Some key facts to remember. These buildings are built outside the period of significance that do not add to the district's sense of time and place. I want you to remember, just because it's old does not make it contributing. Just because someone spent money on it to make it pretty does not make it contributing. And just because it looks good does not make it contributing. Straight from the Secretary of Interior standards, a building contributing to the historic district is one that adds to the district's sense of time and place in historical development. A building not contributing to the historic significance of the district is one that does not add to the district's sense of time and place and historical development. Okay? The line from the Secretary of Interior standards, the line between contributing and non-contributing can be fuzzy, no doubt. As a general rule, a contributing property helps to make a historic district historic. A well-preserved 19th century mansion will generally contribute to the district, while a modern gas station generally will not. Historic buildings identified as contributing properties can become non-contributing properties within a historic district if major alterations have taken place. Sometimes an act as simple as replacing the siding can damage the historic integrity and render it non-contributing. We've had this example in Savannah, Georgia, where the Leopold's ice cream store on Habersham and Gwinnett Street was delisted because it was supposed to have wood siding. Party siding was put on the building. It was delisted from the registry. Something as simple as that, the loss of integrity, makes it non-contributing. Okay? So when we started this journey back in January of 2022, we met with the staff, showed an actual concept of what the site could be. Soon after that, staff submitted to the MPC 11 buildings that were submitted for exceptional importance, okay, including three of the buildings that are presented today. At that time, the Victorian neighborhood seemed not in favor of saving these buildings. As through the letter today, they seemed not in favor of saving these buildings. Okay. Through multiple surveys with the city and through private surveys, it's been deemed not favorable to save these buildings. And even a survey monkey at the time, less than 20% of the neighborhood was not in favor of saving these buildings. Okay. So by example of what was presented last January and February by staff to the MPC, 11 of those buildings were submitted for exceptional importance, including three of these buildings. So I'm going to talk about two buildings that are not on the agenda today, but they're relative because of their exceptional importance nomination by the staff to move forward. Okay. 1201 Bull Street. Okay. So 1201 Bull Street was presented as an exceptional importance example for immediate action. That was in February. The owner of 1201 Bull Street asked the staff to please come visit the property. It's a nice building. I like that building. It's a two-story building. Fits the streetscape with a storefront, apartments above. It's always been one of my favorite buildings. However, the owner said, please come look at my building for historical integrity. Staff did so. These are staff's pictures from the report. The inside has a total loss of historical fabric, including windows, interior finishes, window openings, alterations to doors, et cetera, et cetera. So based on this visit, staff pulled this from the 11 exceptional important buildings and made it 10 exceptional important buildings. Same thing happened with 906 Drayton Street, part of the 11 buildings of exceptional importance. Okay? It's a beautiful building, restored. This building failed to get a COA through this board when it was presented before it was renovated. Then, after it's renovated, it's nominated as an exceptional importance building. How can that be? So it was on the 10 nominated as part of the exceptional importance, okay? My point is, just because it's 50 years old, just because it looks good, and just because someone spent a lot of money on it, does not make it contributing. We have the same issue here. All of the interior historical fabric has been removed. There is a major loss of historical fabric. And what we have essentially here is the same thing we have at 1201 Bull Street. We have four exterior walls and a roof and some structure. So from that argument of what's an exceptionally important building, we can demise that 101 Whitaker is not an exceptionally important building due to its loss of historic fabric. Okay. These are the original plans done by Richard Eck in 1960, showing all of the interior walls and a lot of the original fabric. Building has been extremely modified and updated over the years to where this was a 1997 renovation. You can already see a lot of the walls missing. And then this is what we had in 2010, 2011. The orange walls represent what was actually left of the historic fabric. Interior partitions are moved. All of the windows have been replaced. All of the leaded glass side lights have been replaced. The historic doors have been removed. What we have here is the same thing we have on 1201 Bull Street and the same thing on 906 Drayton Street. How can it be of exceptional importance? Okay. Additional eligibility requirements. Okay. This is for the criteria. Okay. For tax credits and criteria for a nomination. Okay. The historic preservation is meant to preserve historic buildings. Okay. Once the integrity of a building has been lost due to deterioration, damage, or previous alterations, it can never be regained. While new material can exactly copy significant features, material integrity itself can never be recreated. It is important to select a building for rehabilitation that retains its basic physical integrity before rehabilitation. So this tells you when we have a large loss of historical fabric, it loses historical integrity. Okay. We can recreate it. We can replace the windows. We can put on things that look like it is, but it's not a contributing building. It's just a recreation. The staff's research and report that came from the tax credits consultant goes into great detail of what was actually lost. I'm not going to bore you with those details, but it's all in here highlighted, and I'll explain what was that basically says. It says that, first of all, I want to reiterate that this was never a successful office building. IBM built it in 1961. They moved out less than 10 years later because they outgrew it. It sat vacant for 2 years, and then someone bought it, only lived in it for 2 years, sat vacant for another 2 years. It did have a long-term tenant of Drawn College, but they outgrew it. They had to move into 1015 Whitaker Street, and then ultimately they moved to the south side and became South College because everyone outgrows this building. It is not successful where it is. Okay. This talks about, this is straight from the report, that it was remodeled. The building was remodeled many times and even into three separate office spaces, all of which came with separate exterior entrances. So all of the exterior walls have been modified. Okay. That's still evidenced in the exterior today. There have been many alterations to the interior, most of which occurred after 1996. So no original exterior doors, plate glass, side lights, framework, or entrances retained from the original design or construction due to multiple remodels. And the old interior wood veneers were also, doors were not retained. All of the interior partitions were removed. What we have are four exterior walls and a roof. It's just the same as 1201 Bull, just the same as Cedar. We have lost a lot of historic fabric. These are pictures of the earlier, before it was remodeled. You can see even the waffle slab has been cut. It's been damaged significantly. This is before the current owner. Okay. All of the sides have been modified. Just because I can rebuild it, just because I can make it look good, doesn't make it contributing. Okay. So even though it looks good and there it is today, that's what we have. So by example of what was presented by staff last year, this building is not contributing. Okay. This building failed to get tax credits in 2011 for lack of the original materials and the remodel efforts for modern upgrades. I know that's a gray area. If we had a new owner, they could possibly get tax credits for their work. but because of the work and because of the loss of historic integrity, it has never been listed on the National Register. Even the report says it's not eligible in the report. It was not in the surveys, which are incorrect, not eligible for the National Register. I say they're incorrect because they're quickly put together, but that part is true. It was not on the National Register, okay? So it is, this building has for 40 plus years now, through multiple surveys, surveys of the city and the neighborhood, not been listed as contributing. If this were a very important building, everybody would be racing to make this building contributing. If it were the Armory building, the Cotton Exchange, the Scottish Rites building, or even a three-story townhome on Wahlberg, it would be listed as contributing. Why hasn't anyone done that? Because it's simply not fitting, doesn't fit in the neighborhood. It's in the wrong place and in the wrong scale and the wrong density. Okay? We have to keep that in mind. This building was built at a time when there was no oversight and planning, when land was cheap, land was bare. The building was built in 1961, well outside the period of significance for the Victorian district.
Sir, you've got 20 minutes. I just want to let you know if you could
wrap things up. That's my 20 minutes? Okay. Very well. Sorry. Can I just close up real quick?
Please.
Okay, great. So the building has never been successful. It's outside the period of significance. So we're not talking about an exceptionally important building, if I may say. If anyone should have an emotional connection to this building, it would be Tony Eck, whose father designed this building in 1961. He even understands the vision that Savannah could have and that these buildings have outlived their time. I'll have staff submit that letter to you. Okay. So again, you, the HPC, are in charge of reviewing and approving any new buildings. So you're in charge. Okay. All we are is asking for is that, all we're asking for is demolition of a non-contributing building with you designing, you in control of the future. Nothing will happen to the site. The buildings will stay where they are until you, the HPC, approve any new buildings. And all I am asking for is that while, if we are granted this today, that we, as the petitioner, I'm not sure where it was, but I'll just follow up real quickly and close this off by saying, again, you, the HPC, is in charge. Nothing will happen to this site. Nothing will happen to these buildings until it comes back before you. You have the ultimate authority. These buildings will stay where they are. We are trying to work collaboratively with you, the Victorian Neighborhood Association, Historic Savannah. This is a community effort. This is a very big project and a very, very important corner of the park. We want everything that everyone else wants, okay? If I would like to be careful. I would also like to ask you to be careful. Try and vote this on a contributing amount. I know money is not a factor, but money is a factor. It puts a burden on the owner. And for 41 years, these buildings have been non-contributing buildings, okay? Property values are at stake. The purchased property in earnest is due to the fact. So again, we need to provide a true anchor on the southwest corner of Forsyth Park to provide the height and density that's appropriate in life and activity, to provide office space for three local strong companies, to provide below ground parking, and to eliminate the parking, surface parking. I hope that you and the board see merit in this petition and will vote for a demolition on non-contributing buildings contingent upon a future design. Thank you.
Thank you. So, is there any questions for the petitioner, board members? Okay. Are there any members of the public that would like to comment? Please raise your hand so, and then step forward to the podium. You'd like to step forward, sir? State your name.
My name is Ryan Jarles, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF wanted to state that we support the findings of MPC staff regarding the petition before you. HSF finds this building's unique mid-century modern architecture within the district, its association with important persons, and its determination of eligibility for individual listing on the National Register of Historic Places, which is what it had to receive before even applying for those tax credits, does make it qualify as a structure worthy of recognition within our local historic district, and we do not support the demolition of this building. With that being said, HSF does fully understand the unique situation Savannah is currently undergoing. As the petitioner stated, in most cities across the nation, there is a overwhelming and historic office vacancy rate in downtown and metropolitan areas, and Savannah is surprisingly seeing the opposite of that situation. So we understand this need, and we do applaud the petitioners for being forward-thinking and trying to help find solutions for that. If this building and the others coming after this one are saved from demolition, HSF will dedicate our time and work with the petitioners towards finding a solution that helps alleviate our community concerns regarding preservation while also providing these much needed amenities that our community needs. HSF has met with the petitioners, and we have informed them that no matter the outcome of this meeting and with the following items, we will be here as a resource and we will work with them moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public that would like to make public comment at this time? Okay, hearing none. Would the petitioner like to respond to the public comment? Okay. We can now enter into board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. I will call on each board member to two times to speak for 2 minutes or less. Kirsten.
I have no comments at the moment, but I might on my second round.
Thank you.
Rebecca Fenwick. I concur with staff's analysis. I think there's this building in particular kind of overwhelming evidence of its importance. I think, you know, as preservationists, we look at a few different factors when considering whether a building is quote unquote contributing, that being its significance. So thinking about its associations, its architecture, design, uniqueness. And I think in particular, buildings from this era are unique in Savannah. We have already lost quite a few, and
you know, rarity is also a component that we consider as preservationists. If there's fewer of something on the landscape, you know, inevitably that what is left, it becomes more important for that reason. And then, you know, I think this building in particular is just individually significant for the things that, that staff shared. And I wanted to say, too, specific to the Victorian District nomination, you know, tax credits, et cetera, are constrained by these periods of significance, the dates established, which this district was established in 1974, so that's when they picked the start and end date for the district, doesn't necessarily evaluate or negate or even comment on younger buildings, you know, buildings at that time that were predating the end date of that period of significance. You know, it's really just they chose to highlight at that time the period that, you know, was being considered for historic status in 1974. That's all for now.
Pam Miller. Well, the argument the petitioner gave was very compelling, and I appreciate what you said. My concern is that, you know, we are losing some of the uniqueness of some of these buildings in that age. And I, for one, have always enjoyed riding by and seeing that. And I think my concern is you're asking for us at this point to, and not that we're even looking at whether or not this is going to be a contributing building. Well, that's not what's up. It's the demolition of this building without having any idea what's really going to go there. And if that doesn't materialize or something happens, it's back to a vacant lot. So that's got me a little concerned. But I do, again, thank you for your compelling argument. But I think at this point, I'm pretty much leaning towards staff recommendations. Thank you.
May.
This is May Boley. I agree, very well argued and well reasoned. I'm part of the petitioner. I also appreciate the volume of public comment. Public comment really helps us to make our decisions up here. Often we are torn between two well-reasoned arguments. And I gotta say the combination of the significance and uniqueness of these structures and their rarity and how many we've lost, the public comments and the fact that denying the demolition of this building doesn't preclude all of the potential that it could hold to satisfy the needs of our community. It's just talking about, instead of a rebuild, a rehabilitation project. It's talking about modifying. We've seen great examples of this, particularly with regards to mid-century architecture in Savannah. And I look forward personally to being able to see what can be done with what we have here to also meet the needs of the community. So I'm also inclined to agree with staff.
Okay, second round of comment by the
Kirsten Connor. I fully concur with everything my fellow board members have said and MPC recommendation to deny this demolition.
Rebecca Fenwick, I too want to thank the petitioners. I know that was a lot of effort and study that went into this. So, and I think May makes a very good point too that, you know, we often are torn and we need and want to hear from the public. So thank you.
Any further comment? May, any further comment?
No further comment. May Boley.
Okay, so this time I will entertain a motion.
Okay, move to deny the petition. Can we put it back up so I can read it? Move to deny the demolition of the non-contributing building located at 1001 Whitaker Street because the criteria for demolition have not been satisfied and because the building qualifies for contributing status under the exceptional importance criteria.
Do I hear a second?
Pam Miller, second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Motion passes. Okay. On to the next item on the agenda, which is petition of Green Line Architecture, 124 West Park Avenue, demolition of a non-contributing building.
Oh, 1015.
Oh, sorry, 1015. Sorry, 1015 Whitaker Street, demolition of a non-contributing building.
Thank you.
echoing. Can you hear that? Oh, did this turn off? That's what it was. I think it was.
Hello.
Better? All right. The applicant is requesting approval to demolish a non-contributing building for the property located at 1015 Whitaker Street. I'm going to go through the staff photos. This is the rear. Whitaker Street was built in 1957 as a local office building for the Interstate Life and Accident Insurance Company. There's a second building that's nearly identical, located at 1430 East Victory Drive, which is currently being used by WSAV. You can see that here. Here's a street view of it before they put the sign over the freeze. And that's what it looks like now. The Interstate Life and Accident Insurance Company was founded in Tennessee in 1909, but in the 1920s, the company was operating in seven southern states, including Georgia. Let's see, show this picture. At 1015 Whitaker, there's a three-part freeze above the main entry of the building. Staff research yielded some information about a home office building located in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that has the very same freeze above the main entry, though it's a much larger building in the Art Moderne style, constructed in 1950. This building has a connection to a widely known sculptor and artist, Thomas Puryear Mims, who designed the freeze originally seen on the main office building in Chattanooga. Mims has several sculptures around Nashville, but studied in Paris and New York and gained recognition upon his return to Tennessee, where he became the sculptor in residence at Vanderbilt. The same frieze includes the company's logo and is seen repeated on 1015 Whitaker and on 1430 East Victory Drive. Mid-century style of 1015 Whitaker is unique to its time period of the 1950s, with elements such as the aqua-tinted metal-framed windows. Hard to see, but this one sort of shows them. The storefront entry with the receding concrete surround here. And of course, the frieze and then the stacked brickwork. This building may be outside the period's significance for the Victorian district, but it still stands as a testament to a particular style not often seen in the district. The other building at 1430 East Victory Drive is not in a historic district, thereby adding to the rarity of this distinctive building within the Victorian district. I'm going to go through the same criteria as I did last time. So the criteria for demolition, any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status. Contributing buildings include exceptional importance. Contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, association, and meet one or more of the following criteria. So it's the same four criteria as before, are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons in our past, embody the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or represent the work of a master, or have yielded or may be likely to yield information important to the history or prehistory. And staff's assessment is that although outside the period of significance, the building is 66 years old, and staff finds that it possesses integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. Additionally, it is associated with the life of a significant person in our past. Tom Puryear Mims was a nationally known sculptor artist who designed the frieze above the main entrance for this building for the Interstate Life and Accident Insurance Company. Excuse me.
All right. So in granting a COA for demolition, the HPC may impose reasonable conditions as will mitigate the negative effects of the demolition. So if the demolition is approved, staff recommends that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings, and that rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the material salvaged for reuse. Staff is recommending denial for demolition of the non-contributing building located at 1015 Whitaker Street because the criteria for demolition have not been satisfied and because the building qualifies for contributing status under the exceptional importance criteria. If the building is approved for demolition, staff recommends that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings and that rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and materials salvaged for reuse. So we have the same public comments as last time. Because they were Ellie Isaac's comments, and then the VNA's comments were for three buildings, 101 Whitaker, 1015 Whitaker, and that's supposed to be 124 West Park Avenue. So we have the same public comments as last time. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Do any of the commission have any questions for staff? Hearing none, the petitioner would like to step forward once again.
Hello, everyone. Keith Allington with Green Line Architecture, representing the petitioners and property owners of this petition today. I've not changed who I am, so I won't go through all of that again. But what we have here again is a building that has historically, for 40-plus years of oversight, has not been a contributing building. It's a one-story building. It's out of scale. It's 2,500 square feet. It takes 10,000 square feet of surface parking lot to support it. I personally worked in this building for about 4 years. It's a nice little building. It's small. Everything outgrows it. It has no successful long-term life. It's in the wrong place, built at the wrong time, out of the period of significance. Ms. Miller, to your point, a very good point of why aren't we seeing any plans of what could be there. A year ago, a year and a half ago, we actually had plans. I submitted them to staff as a pre-conference meeting. In the background, staff worked to derail the project, so to speak, to try to make these projects contributing. We can simply not spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and time planning for a new building when someone is working in the background, not in the spirit of working collaboratively, not in the spirit of working with the community, and not in the spirit of working with proper government to work against you when they should be working with you to make a better community. We simply can't put ourselves out there for hundreds of thousands of dollars and someone is working in the background to make these buildings contributing. We are here today to ask for demolition of a non-contributing building, to decide what makes these buildings contributing or non-contributing. We are here to work with you as a team. That's what we want to do. This is something that can anchor the corner of Forsyth Park. We can eliminate parking problems by going underground. We can provide the right scale, height, and mass and density for this project. How can this building be of exceptional importance when it's underscaled, under the height? We have a building by an unknown architect. We have a building that is a prototype of multiple buildings built throughout the Southeast. We have one on Victory Drive, one in Thomasville. Why is this building of exceptional importance? It's not. It would be ridiculous to say it is. It's an office building that has never been successful, and it requires lots of vacant land to support. So I hope that the board can see that and not get caught up on the emotion and not make this a case of emotion because it's a cute building. Make it a case for what could be in Savannah and the proper development of what could happen on that corner. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any members of the public that would like to make any remarks? Please state your name for the record.
Ryan Jarles, Historic Savannah Foundation. I won't repeat all of my comments from before, so we'll just simply say it again. We support staff's recommendation for denial, and we will support the petitioners moving forward in helping them figure out a solution for this problem. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment at this moment in time? Sir, could you state your name?
Yes, Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. This clearly is a high-style Art Moderne building and is worthy of preservation, so I support the staff recommendations.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public at this point in time that would like to make a comment? Hearing none, I will move on to board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, I do agree with staff recommendations for denial of this demolition. I would like to point out that the whole purpose of the MPC, or one of the purposes of MPC, is to regulate and constantly update as we're moving forward in time. So the fact that this historic district was done so long ago, it deserves to be amended continually, even 40 years from now. Depending on what kind of infrastructure is there. I just wanted to point that out. Also, the fact that the identical building on Victory is not in a protected area, I think that even warrants this being a contributing building even more. In the future, we could lose the other one. Not to mention, this is a very significant style of architecture for the development of Savannah.
Rebecca Fenwick, I think I have similar thoughts to the previous petition, but I did want to just respond to say, you know, there is some subjectivity to what we're doing, as Mr. Howington knows from his time on HDBR. And I don't think we are at all saying that the building size has direct influence on whether or not it's significant or contributing. I think that argument doesn't really stand for how we are charged to look at things. So, and like I said, I think my previous thoughts about the building's uniqueness, its rarity, and the style, and the fact that the district was established so long ago still stand. Thanks.
Pam Miller. Again, it's very subjective, I think. It is quite unique. I don't know that I'm as moved by this one as the other, but at the same time, it's part of the fabric that we're losing so much of in Savannah. And I think at this point and in this time, I'm going to have to go along with staff recommendations.
May Bowley, I too am inclined to agree with staff, and I just want to state that staff continuing to evaluate, as Kirsten said, continuing to evaluate these districts and evaluating buildings over time in a sort of circular fashion is their job. They do a good job. Don't take it personally. It's never personal. They're doing their best to help maintain the integrity of the city, which is for our property owners, to protect their property value in addition to our communal experience of our built environment. It's never a personal grudge, and to indicate so, I don't think is kind or fair. So we like to defend our staff in that regard. And then that's my comment. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to make a comment at this point as well. Speaking to the duplicate building on Victory Drive, also the one in Hinesville, and the lack of protected statuses that those districts afford, I was speaking to a complete stranger today outside my office about Johnny Harris, which is located across the street, which we lost because it wasn't in a protected neighborhood. And that was a significant building that we couldn't save, and there's going to be a supermarket there in the future, which I think most Savanians who remember that place, whether they were there for a short period of time before when it was there or a long time, miss those kind of comments on the evolution of our city. And the 1950s is 70 years ago. And when this was, when the historic district was evolved, it was only a 20-year-old building. Today, it's a 70-year-old building. and the buildings that were being evaluated in the 70s were 70 years old. So that's kind of, if we remove it, then we erase it from the history of our, of the district and how the city evolved and part of the story of the city. And that's kind of where, you know, this whole story, this whole, existence of architecture and how we preserve it, the narrative of our community has to be explained and put into context. So anyway, that's my little opinion there. And if anybody has any further comment to make, we'll take that now and then we'll call for a motion.
I have no further comment, but actually I do. I would just say I agree with you on Johnny Harris is a perfect example of losing a very significant building because it is not protected. So I feel we have a duty to look into buildings that are in protected districts, even if they're non-contributing, to identify and evaluate for the future of them.
Rebecca Fenwick, no further comment.
Pam Miller, no further comment.
May Boley, briefly wanting to point to the lovely building at the corner of 37th and Bull Street, which was a single-story mid-century garage. And because demolition of that non-contributing structure was denied, the architects ended up coming up with one of, I think, the most charming rehabs that we have in that core. So I would encourage to take cues and notes from that one for the idea of how we can accomplish both keeping this building and meeting the needs of the community, which is possible. Thank you.
I'll take one more on that as well. The in the presentation of the petitioner earlier, the Cedar office, which was rehabbed, and it came through this board. They took the existing building and worked around it to make it to their use. So even though it wasn't demolished, so the part of the narrative of that building still exists, and it was made into a purposeful building that can exist in the 21st century. So even that, I have more of an appreciation for. So can I have a motion on the item, please?
This is Pam Miller. I move that we deny for demolition the non-contributing building located at 1015 Whitaker Street because the criteria for demolition have not been met, have not been satisfied, and because the building qualifies for contributing status under the exceptional importance criteria.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Motion passes. So item number 24, petition of Greenlight Architecture, 124 West Park Avenue, demolition of a non-contributing building.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The applicant is requesting approval for demolition of the non-contributing building located at 124 West Park Avenue. Here are some photos of each side. That's the garage, actually. I want to scroll through some staff photos here. One 124 West Park Avenue was originally constructed prior to 1888, but was modified in the 1960s to connect the building with the neighboring 122 West Park Avenue. The structure first appears on the 1888 Sanborn map when Park Avenue was known as West New Houston Street. The MPC map of contributing and non-contributing resources within the Victorian Historic District notes the current building is non-contributing with a construction date of 1965.
but a closer inspection of the Sanborn map shows that two nearly identical wood frame houses at 122 and 124 West Park Avenue were joined together by a central hall and covered in a brick veneer. It is believed that this change took place when the Sidney A. Jones Funeral Home relocated from 511 West Wahlberg Street due to an urban renewal project in the 1960s. Some original features that can still be seen include the brick on the foundation level, the left side of the front elevation has what appears to be original door and side lights and transom. The rear of the building has wood siding, suggesting a part of the original structures that are still visible. And lastly, the decorative cornice brackets may be original, judging by the context of other surrounding historic buildings in the 100 and 200 blocks of West Park Avenue that also have decorative cornice brackets. Today, the building is still a family-operated funeral home. According to the website, Sidney A. Jones Funeral Home has the legacy of being the leading African-American funeral home in Savannah and was in operation through 2006 when Sidney's wife, Carol B. Jones, sold the business to a longtime employee, David L. Campbell Sr., who reopened it as Campbell and Sons Funeral Home. So here's some older excerpts that we included. All right, and so same as before, the criteria for demolition. Any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status prior to the issuance of a COA for demolition. Exceptional importance. Contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one of the above criteria. I'm going to read those one last time. Actually, not the last time. Are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons in our past, embody the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, and that or that represent the work of a master, have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in history or prehistory. This building, although originally constructed prior to 1888, was altered in 1965 to become the building that can be seen today. This date is outside the period of significance. However, the building in its current altered state is 58 years old, and staff finds that it possesses integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. Additionally, it is associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, specifically African-American history in Savannah. All right, with regard to conditions, in granting a COA for demolition, the HPC may impose, in addition to those, reasonable conditions as will mitigate the negative effects of the demolition. If the building is approved for demolition, staff recommends that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings, and that rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and materials salvaged for reuse. Staff is recommending denial for demolition of the non-contributing building located at 124 West Park Avenue because the criteria for demolition have not been satisfied because the building qualifies for contributing status under the exceptional importance criteria. And again, we have the same two public comments, but then we received one additional one from a resident who's opposed to the demolition of this building. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Board members, do you want to leave any questions with staff?
I have a question, Leah. What's the year on these older Sanborn maps that show the structures two separated buildings?
So it's, let me go back to them. This is 1953 and this is 1966.
Thank you.
Rebecca Fenwick. So potentially that's the year the brick veneer was added.
We're thinking 1965.
And you, I'm correct that the same funeral home has been in continuous operation since that time?
Right. It changed ownership and names. I don't think I said what year it was, but.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Hearing none, would the petitioner like to step forward? And just for reference, you have 2.5 minutes of your 30 minutes total left.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Keith Allington with Green Line Architecture. I'm here to represent the petition today and the petition and property owners. Okay. I don't know how to get back to my, but that's okay. I can use this right here. It's fine. Back to the original thing. I would like to show actually my, sorry, I don't know where my presentation is.
Did you pull the jump drive?
I didn't. Okay. I don't know where it is. Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. I just want to say, I think in this city, we have a contributing and non-contributing issue, okay? We have buildings that are listed as contributing that are non-contributing, and we have buildings that are listed as non-contributing that maybe are contributing. But the ones that are non-contributing, that are listed as non-contributing, we said today are correct. Of course, those are non-contributing. But we, to go back to the Secretary of Interior standards, it's very clear. A simple act of possibly removing siding destroys the historic integrity of a building. It can jeopardize your national register. It can jeopardize your tax credits by changing the makeup of this structure. Okay? Looking at 124 West Bull Street, how in the world can this be a contributing building? We had two buildings that have been stitched together. We've taken two possibly contributing buildings, stitched them together with a central hallway, remove all of the historic siding, put up a fake brick veneer, rip off all the front porches, rip off all the back additions, modify all the windows, add ramps, add 4 or 5 different brick veneers, put up a fake porch, put up a ramp. How in the world have we not destroyed large amounts of historical integrity? Sure, there's some historic fabric under there, but just removing siding can jeopardize that. Lordy mercy, we have a recreated building here. There is absolutely no way this is an exceptionally important building. We can't see that. We have a very serious problem in this city. So I would like for you to look at that with open eyes and see what's happened here. I understand this has historically been an African-American funeral home. This is not a political agenda today. This is a contributing versus a non-contributing. These are actions that we do not want to celebrate or perpetuate throughout the historic district to take two contributing buildings and turn them into one. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for being expedient as well. Do any of the members of the board have any questions for the petitioner?
I have one. Is anybody sure that the historic siding is not retained underneath the brick veneer? Has that been confirmed? No? Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Would any of the members of the board like to make any comments? Oh, public comments, yes, thank you. Is there any member of the public that would like to step forward and make a comment? Please state your name for the record before you speak.
Ryan Charles with Historic Savannah Foundation. I'll go very briefly again. Staff supports, HSF supports staff's recommendation for denial due to this building's association with Savannah's African-American history, its unique and architecturally significant 1960s alterations. which are significant in their own right and for the same reasons indicated within staff's recommendation. So just as the others, we do oppose the demolition of this building. And we offer again our support to the petitioners on these projects moving forward. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Andrew Jones with the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I am against demolition and in favor of the staff recommendation for slightly different reasons. These clearly are two clapboard houses from the 1880s. They are Victorian houses in the Victorian district. I can't believe we have to come up to the podium to preserve Victorian buildings in the Victorian district, but apparently we do these days. So I hope that you deny the demolition. I'm the owner of the John Berrien House downtown, which was a 1791 building, clapboard building, covered with a stucco exterior. Yes, you can often find an original building underneath one of these later structures if that's the direction you so choose. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to concur with those statements. There was a number of asbestos clad buildings throughout the city as well that have their original siding still residing underneath as well. So that is certainly a point to be considered. Any other public comment? Please step forward, sir, and state your name for the record.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Kiwan Drayton. I serve with the Greater Savannah Black Chamber of Commerce, as well as I'm the business owner of Mailbox Cafe here in Savannah. I just want to say that I support the staff's recommendation to deny. The business is a longstanding business in the African-American community, and the owners not only maintain great relationships with the community, but they also use their influence and their location to support other small Black-owned businesses such as florists, as well as mobile car detailers. I live in the area and I also run businesses in the area. Most of my shipping and printing and notary services come from the funeral home, and if that is impacted, then my business would also be impacted as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Do we have any other public comment? Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Hi, Clara Gregg. I am a current resident of the Victorian District, and I just wanted to come up and say that I, along with many others in the district, do not support the recommendation from the VNA to support this proposal, and we do support the findings of the HPC to block this demolition. And I've lost my train of thought. We do feel that there are significant historical value in each of these buildings, especially 124 West Park with the longstanding family-owned funeral home. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other people that would like to step forward?
Thank you very much. I would like to rebuttal a couple of things.
Please state your name for the record again, sir.
Certainly. Keith Allington, the petitioner. First of all, I appreciate Mr. Jones' comments and what he's done for the Berrien House. Everyone can't restore something like that due to funding and what might be under this building. We can look at this building and see that the integrity of this building has been heavily modified, heavily jeopardized, and it's evident on every elevation. The Secretary of Interior Standards tells you that when we have such a loss of historical integrity, it is no longer a contributing building. It is a recreation. It is recreated in the time that it was, but it's not a true restoration. Okay. Also, this is a business. We are not talking about a long-standing African-American business. We are talking about buildings here today. The business and the business entity is between the owner of the building and the business owner. This is a business. They don't own the building. They own the business. This has been a place of business, long-standing, but not the building. We are talking about a contributing building, nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So at this point in the time, we're going to close public comment if there's no further public comment to be put forward and open it up for board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, I do want to state that even though the two buildings have been combined and there's been a plethora of material changes. Those material changes are still historic. They are over 50 years old and they communicate the evolution of this building in a historic way. Oftentimes in African American communities, this is very prevalent, and that has been a problem with preservation in the past of not recognizing and denying historic buildings because of the evolution of materials that have been applied. Another point I'd like to make, the funeral home was relocated here because of urban renewal. And in a sense, this is kind of repeating history. So I wholeheartedly concur with MPC's recommendation to deny this demolition.
Rebecca Fenwick, thank you to the petitioner. I was thinking to say a similar thought to Ms. Connor, which is that this, you know, the application of brick veneer is a common practice in the African American tradition, and that is the height of use for this particular building. When we think about what makes a building significant, we need to think about what was the most significant association with the building throughout its life and its history, and certainly the most significant association with these structures is the funeral home use. So while we're not looking specifically at, you know, whether or not the business is significant, the use of the building related to events that occurred at a particular place, that's certainly part of understanding historic significance. And I wanted to point out too that the Bethel AME Church at, which is just outside of any local district, which was at Broad and Gwinnett, was lost. It was also had brick veneer that was applied, African American congregation. There was a wood frame, much older structure beneath. And so, you know, sometimes these things are lost, and we should consider that in this petition. I think that concludes my thoughts. Thank you.
Pam Miller, forgive my naivete, because this is only my third meeting, and so I know a lot of times we have petitioners come in here and present buildings that they are renovating, and they'll remove a brick and they'll find that there's something more historic underneath that. And then they go through that process to do that. And we don't know that with this building. I can't, even though I know it's not part of this, I can't overlook the significance to the African American community here. Losing those things would be a part of losing the fabric of Savannah. But, again, we just don't know what's there. And also just from a personal level, I took my 1950s neighborhood historic, and I had a lot of comments from people that were downtown asking me, like, what did I think I was doing taking a 50-year-old neighborhood? But I met that 50-year threshold in my neighborhood. So, you know, it is historic. So I understand that anything that's over 50 years old by criteria is historic. So, again, those bricks seem to fit into that, as does my neighborhood. And I have to go along with the recommendations of staff on this one. Thank you.
May Boley, I agree with staff.
Any further comment from any of the commission members?
No further comment. Kirsten.
No further comment.
Pam Miller, no further comment.
May Boley, no further comment.
Then can I put forward that somebody make a motion?
I'll take it. May Boley, I make a motion to deny for demolition of the non-contributing building located at 124 West Park Avenue because criteria for demolition have not been satisfied and because the building qualifies for contributing status under the exceptional importance criteria.
We have a second.
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Call to vote. May.
May Boley approve.
Pam Miller approve.
Rebecca Fenwick approve.
Kirsten Connor approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, on to the next item. Item number 26, Greenlight Architecture. 115 West Wahlberg Street.
I think we're on 120 West Park. Yeah, we are.
20? Okay. Sorry, 120 West Park Avenue.
The applicant is requesting approval for the demolition of the non-contributing building located at 115 West Wahlberg Street. Staff could not definitively... I grabbed the wrong one. The applicant is requesting approval for demolition of a non-contributing building for the property located at 120 West Park Avenue. 120 West Park Avenue was constructed in 1965 and is now a building for 124 West Park Avenue. 124, altered in 1965 from two Victorian-era buildings into the one that can be seen today, was altered when the Sidney A. Jones Funeral Home relocated from 511 West Wahlberg Street. 120 West Park Avenue is an eight-car concrete block garage which still functions today as Hearst Parking. Regarding the criteria for demolition, any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status prior to the issuance of a COA for demolition. Exceptional importance. Contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one of the following criteria. Are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons, embody the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or that represent the work of a master, have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in history or prehistory. The building is 58 years old, and although built at the same time as the funeral home was created or altered, does not possess integrity of design and materials. Therefore, it does not meet the criteria for exceptional importance. Staff recommends that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings, and that rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. Staff is recommending approval for demolition of the non-contributing building with the following conditions because the building does not meet the criteria for exceptional importance. One, document the building per the MPC policy for documenting buildings. Two, rather than traditional demolition, the building is to be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for staff?
I have one question. I'm a little fuzzy on the actual rules around can this be demolished with just this, or do they need to come back with a proposal?
This is the application for demolition.
So with this approval, the building can be demolished regardless of what may or may not occur on the rest of the lot, correct?
Right.
Okay, thank you for clarifying.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Would the petitioner like to step forward?
Hello, everyone. Keith Allington with Green Line Architecture. I am in full support of the staff's recommendations.
Okay. Any questions for the petitioner? Okay. Would any members of the public like to come forward and make a statement?
Back again. Ryan Charles, Historic Savannah Foundation. We, too, support staff's recommendation for approval. Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to make a public comment? Hearing none, move on to board discussion. Any members of the board have anything to say?
Kirsten Connor. As much as I'd like to see the business stay there and continue use, that's not in our purview. So I agree with staff recommendations for demolition, as this is not an exceptional building.
Rebecca Fenwick, I agree. No comment. Pam Miller, no comment.
May Boley, I agree with staff. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other comment anybody needs to make now? Then this time I will call for a motion.
Rebecca Fenwick, I motion we approve the demolition of the non-contributing building at 120 West Park Avenue with staff conditions.
May Boley, second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Pam Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Motion passes. Okay, now on to the next item, 115 West Walberg Street.
The applicant is requesting approval for the demolition of the non-contributing building located at 115 West Walberg Street. Staff could not definitively determine the date of construction, believed to have been built as an accessory building for the main dwelling unit that no longer exists. The estimated construction date is the early 1970s. The building does not appear in the 1966 Sanborn map, which you can see here. The building is constructed from concrete block. Let me go back to the staff. For the submittal packet. So this is the front facade here. The building is constructed from concrete block with wood lap siding in the gable ends, has a high-pitched front gable asphalt shingle roof with skylights, and the only fenestration is a pair of doors on the front facade facing Walberg Street. Through a COA in 2019, the building has been altered. Prior to the alterations, the building had a low-pitched front gable tin roof with plywood in the gable ends, which you can see here. The roof system was removed and replaced with the high-pitched roof system. Staff cannot locate any additional information about this building. Criteria for demolition. Any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status prior to the issuance of the COA for demolition. Exceptional importance. Contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one of the above criteria. Are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons, embody the distinct characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or that represent the work of a master, have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in history or prehistory. The building is approximately 50 years old. However, the roof system was removed, therefore it no longer possesses integrity of design or materials. Therefore, if further, it does not meet any of the criteria described above and therefore does not qualify for exceptional importance. Staff is recommending that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings, and rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the materials salvaged. So, staff is recommending approval for the demolition of the non-contributing building with the following conditions: because the building does not possess integrity, nor does it meet the criteria for exceptional importance. One, document the building per the MPC policy for documenting buildings. Two, rather than traditional demolition, the building is to be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question for you, Leah. So when it came through in 2019 and had the premise that the roof and everything had not been contributing anymore, but that was under the old zoning ordinance that it was passed when it was approved to change the roof angles and everything in 2019?
No, because it was at the end of the year. It was a non-contributing building.
So it was, okay. But then at that point, that the whole look of the building, including its architectural significance, right. You know, the pitch and everything changes mm-hmm. everything once again, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, any other questions for staff? Is the petitioner here and would they like to come forward and make a statement?
Hello, everyone. Keith Howington again. This is the last time we'll talk today. Thank you very much for your time and effort. I know it's been a hard one today. I am in agreement with staff's recommendations fully for demolition of this building. I do have a question, though. The roof was removed, so it destroyed the historical integrity of the building. How can that be? Now it's non-contributing because we've removed some of the historic fabric of the building and changed the roof of the building. We have the same example on two other buildings that are presented here. We have lots of loss of historical fabric. It's the same case, whether it's a small shed or a cute, pretty building. It is the same case. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Thank you very much.
Do any of the commission members have any questions for the petitioner? Hearing none, are there any members of the public that would like to step forward and make a comment?
Ryan Jarles, Historic Savannah Foundation. We also support staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from the public? Hearing none, I open it up for board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, I agree with staff's recommendations for approval of this non-contributing building.
I agree. Rebecca Fenwick.
I agree with staff recommendations. Pam Miller.
May Boley, I agree. And do want to point out for the record that a shed and a nice pretty building are not the same thing. They're not. They're in fact different. Thanks.
Okay. Oh, one more comment.
Kirsten Connor, I also want to amend that to deconstruction if there are salvageable materials as recommended by staff. And I agree with May Boley on her comment.
Rebecca Fenwick, no additional comment.
Pam Miller, no additional comment.
May Boley, no comment.
Okay, let's call for a motion then.
I'd like to make a motion, Pam Miller. I'd like to make a motion that we approve for demolition of the non-contributing building located at 115 West Wahlberg Street with the following conditions: because the building does not possess integrity, nor does it meet the criteria for exceptional importance. Number one, document the building for the MPC policy for documenting buildings. Number two, rather than traditional demolition, the building is to be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
Yes.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Pam Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Motion passes. Okay, next. Be on to 909 Whittaker Street. New construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you. This is Leah again. For the last time today. The applicant is requesting approval for new construction parts 1 and 2 for a two-story carriage house at the rear of the property located at 909 Whittaker Street. The ground floor is a three-car garage, while the upstairs is an accessory dwelling unit. Per the applicant, the design is influenced by the primary residence of the property, in addition to being based upon an analysis of historic building patterns, design precedents, and the evolutionary pattern of Savannah's urban context. This is the main building, so you can see what they are talking about when they say that they that the new building is influenced by the main building. Historically, on the 1888 map, let's see, I'm going to show something here, actually. There were a variety of buildings at the back of the site. In fact, you can see that the stable actually at the rear of the site was built before the main building. And then this is
You can see on this map, very tiny, it says it's being built. So that's interesting. But, and then it moves on to having a two-story, what's labeled as an auto, and then a one-story shed. And then it's labeled as an auto and a dwelling. However, by 1966, none of those buildings were present anymore. With regard to visual compatibility, this is the carriage house to the west, and this is the historic carriage house to the east. So the building's right here in the middle of the two. So contributing carriage houses do exist on the block face. This is the context elevation. So that's the carriage house on the west that I showed you, and the one on the east. And this right here, you can see the main building in the back, but this form right here is the proposed building. The building is proposed to be 26 feet 7 inches to the roof peak, which staff finds compatible with the height of the buildings to the north and the south. I said west and east. I meant north and south. Excuse me. Staff finds the building width, overall scale, setbacks, and rhythm of the open space between the buildings visually compatible, as well as the rhythm of the windows. All visible windows are taller than they are wide, except for this round accent window that you can see. There's some on the other side of the building, but that side's not visible. The building is proposed to be brick and wood siding. It'll have a metal standing seam roof, wood details and trim, wood windows and doors, and staff finds all materials visually compatible. With regard to porches, balusters shall be placed between upper and lower rails. The distance between balusters shall not exceed 4 inches, and the height of the railing shall not exceed 36 inches. So all that, the only thing that was provided for the railing was this sketch here. So we are asking for a railing detail that provides all the dimensions that are required by the ordinance. The electric panel wasn't shown on the site plan, so we're just asking for that, or the electric meter, excuse me. So with regard to accessory dwelling units, there was new standards just adopted by City Council for accessory dwelling units at the end of May. So this is really one of the first times that they're being tested. So I just wanted to bring that up before I went through the standards, because you'll see that there's some issues with them. This is not one of the new standards right here, though, just for your information. Ah. 10 feet are required between the main house and the carriage house, and they're at 9.5. So that will need to be increased to 10 to meet that standard. Accessory dwelling units shall not exceed, oh, sorry, I missed one. The building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be a maximum of 40% of the building footprint of the principal dwelling dwelling, not to exceed 700 square feet. This is a new standard. So this is the accessory dwelling unit on the second floor, and it actually is 968 square feet. So that standard obviously is not met. And a couple other additional new standards. Accessory dwelling units shall not exceed 25 feet or the height of the principal building, whichever is less. So they're proposing 26 feet, 7 inches. So that'll need to be reduced. And then any portion of an accessory dwelling unit over 15 feet in height shall be located at least 15 feet from a rear property line that does not abut a lane. So this is a unique circumstance. This building or this site in the rear abuts Howard Street. So it's a street and not a lane. So that standard is technically not met. They would have to have a 15-foot rear yard setback, which is not possible, nor is it appropriate in this location. So we can't do it today, but staff is recommending that they apply for variances from some of these standards. Staff is recommending approval for new construction parts 1 and 2 with the following conditions, because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. 1, provide a dimension detail of the railing. 2, provide the location of the electrical meter. 3, increase the distance between the principal structure and the accessory dwelling unit to a minimum of 10 feet. 4, reduce the overall height of the building to a maximum of 25 feet. 5, apply for a variance recommendation request to allow the accessory dwelling unit to exceed 700 square feet. And 6, apply for a variance recommendation request to allow the building to exceed 15 feet in height within 15 feet from a rear property line. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
So, Leah, this is Darren. So my question is, as far as variances are concerned, before we get into a discussion, do we need to, before we approve everything, would that be a separate thing and then they'd have to come back again, or should we ask the petitioner if they just want to apply for the variance and then come and present it at the next meeting? And the reason why I'm asking this question is because we do have a significant amount of items on the agenda today, and in fairness to everybody else in the room, I'd like to be able to move forward and address those before we lose our quorum in an hour.
Yeah, I mean, they would come back for those.
Right.
Is that what you're asking?
Can I ask the petitioner if they would be willing to do that?
Okay.
Before we enter into a full discussion, and then
discussing it,
and then having them come back in a month to review again and put it on the agenda again, we could review the whole thing at that point in time.
Sure. Do you want to ask them?
Yeah, sure. Can the petitioner please step forward? So you understand with the predicament we're in with a lot of other people in the room, not that we want to deny you, because it looks like a really great presentation. It's just that I want to tie up a bunch of stuff for everybody else in the room and have you come back next month.
I had a 30-minute presentation plan.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
My name is Christian Sotillo. I am the petitioner for this, and I do understand this recently passed ordinance, I think, was a surprise to all of us, and we've been working with staff. I appreciate staff's coordination to help work through this procedurally, so we are prepared to do that. And I think given the nature of this being a smaller project, we can certainly ask for a continuance so that we can bring forward
and maybe even together. Look at some of these recommendations so that when we come back next time, we can expedite you through the process.
That's right. We
will do that. Fantastic.
Okay. So
all right. So, what do I need to do to move that forward? And a motion? Do we need public comment or anything else? Or can we move it to the next?
We need a motion
to
move it.
So, board, can I get a motion to?
It's Rebecca Fenwick. I motion we continue the petition for 909 Whitaker Street to the next meeting.
May Bowley second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
May Bowley, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Next. You like that? Next item on the agenda, petition for 644 West 36th Street, rehabilitations and alterations.
This is Jamie Zarella presenting the staff recommendation for 644 West 36th Street. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitations and alterations. The proposed scope of work includes the following: window repair and replacement of non-historic windows, repair and replacement of roofing and roof drainage system, and minor repairs of existing fence on the site. The historic structure was constructed in 1931 and is a contributing building. Of note in the context is that in the 1994 survey card, it states the building was rehabilitated. In the survey card states that the building was boarded up and was a shell, meaning that there were no existing windows on the site in 1994. And then the building was rehabilitated in the early 2000s, including new windows. And here are photos provided by the petitioner. So staff only really had one comment, which is that as aluminum clad windows are proposed to be used throughout, staff is recommending that wood windows be used in accordance with the standards, which state that windows that are replaced have to match the original configuration and material, which would have been wood windows. And so staff's recommendation is to approve with the condition that the petitioner utilize wood windows for all proposed window replacements as opposed to the proposed aluminum clad windows. I'll take any questions you have.
I have a question. Rebecca Fenwick. In the past, when window replacements were proposed in a historic building, I think staff has done like an examination of the windows in an effort to try to maintain windows. I realize these are not original windows, but I'm curious if there was a site inspection or not.
We did a site visit, but not like a full-on inspection.
I used to walk past this building like almost every day, and I'm kind of surprised that the building, the windows can't be salvaged, but I will ask the applicant. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for staff? Hearing none, can the petitioner please step forward?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Patrick Shea. I'm with Gunn-Meyerhoff Shea Architects, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Mercy Housing. Mercy Housing has acquired the property and qualified for a 9% low-income housing tax credit. I guess I should also stop to reflect to give props to Meredith Stone and Latoya Waters, who did all the work. They just sent me down here to talk. So what you like is what you see, then that's their good work. The building, of course, has been converted from its original purpose, Charity Hospital. Incidentally, Meredith Stone's father was actually born in Charity Hospital when it was a hospital. But a little over 20 years ago, it was converted into affordable housing. The 9% low-income housing tax credit that was qualified for was to bring the building back up to standard. It has fallen into substandard conditions due to wear and tear over the time. So, you know, one of the sort of philosophical questions that I'll pose to you today is its status as affordable housing and how that might affect your thinking about the windows. As they stated, the windows that are in the building now are not the original windows. They have plastic glides and, have been replaced, although they were replaced 20-some years ago with windows that are wood on the outside. It's been a hardship for the prior owner and for this owner to be able to keep up with maintenance. One of the things that's very difficult with an affordable housing project is the rent doesn't the cost of the actual maintenance of the building, because the rent is subsidized, it actually doesn't drive any additional money that's available for capital maintenance. Another issue that's something I think I'm perhaps even more concerned about is the energy consumption. All of the windows now are single pane glass. A lot of them have been broken. A lot of the people that live inside, because the amount of heat gain that they have through single-pane glass, can't actually afford to keep their air conditioning running all the time. So they open and close the windows, which you would say is not a bad thing, except for when they open and close the windows, it causes black mold to accumulate on the inside of the buildings because they're humid and they're not humid, and then they're humid and then they're not humid. So I would ask for you to consider those things. What we'd like to be able to do is come back and put in a window that would appear identical to the windows that are in there now, and we hope are the patterns that were for the original windows. We're not totally sure, but we suspect that the windows that were installed 20 years ago have the light patterns that were original and allow us to have insulated glass and the cladding on the exterior. If you're not fond of aluminum, then there are other claddings that we could propose. But that way, they won't have to go back and repaint them every 2 or 3 years or 3 to 5 years. The simple truth is they probably won't be able to afford to go back and paint them ever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the original windows that were in the building was when the building didn't know it would ever be air conditioned. So, you know, it has a different whole set of thermal properties. And they were probably also hard of pine windows, which you can't get anymore. So if you can't keep up with the painting, they'll deteriorate very, very quickly. So it's my understanding that on the petition that comes up next, there was a petition 5 years ago to replace some of the windows with this exact window that we've proposed. That's why we proposed them. We thought that was actually more compatible, and that they sought and obtained a variance in order to be able to have insulated glass and have the sort of modern features of the windows. We'd like to ask for your forbearance on that. I guess what I'm saying is, on behalf of Mercy Housing, I'm praying for some mercy here, that we get the opportunity to put modern sustainable windows in there and allow the people that live inside to, you know, save $100 a month or so on their electric bill.
Thank you. Do any of the board have any questions for the petitioner?
Rebecca Fenwick, are those casements and the three that are ganged together on the screen now, are those casement windows? No? Are they just, are they operable at all? Do we know what those are?
I don't know the answer to your question. I did not do the survey the inside of the unit, so I don't know whether the window cranks are there or not. But they're replacements for what was there originally.
Uh-huh. I've never seen a window open here. And I'm curious about the operability even of those. That's why I asked about that.
That's unfortunately, Rebecca, that's part of the reason why some of the panes get broken out, is the people that live there quite literally break the glass so they can get some ventilation in. That's one of the reasons why I'm not keen on just keeping the windows and repainting them.
I've never seen any broken windows either.
I can show you lots of pictures. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, please. I mean, that's what that's what this time is for, is the evidence, right? So if you have photos. I don't have any other questions at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Kirsten Connor. I saw on your submittal for the spec of the window that you have a 2/2 light pattern. If I recall, you had just said that you were planning to replicate the light pattern that exists. Is that right? Correct?
Yeah, the spec that we submitted is a generic specification for the window type, which is the aluminum clad. It's a wood window, but it has aluminum cladding on the outside. But the elevations you'll see show that the light patterns and all are replicated.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other comments or questions? Are there any members of the public that would like to step forward and make a, thank you, Pat. Is there any other members of the public that would like to step forward and make a public comment at this time? Hearing none, I'll open it up for board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, for the most part, I really agree with staff recommendations and really love this project and what it's going to be doing. I am curious, though, about the windows that Rebecca Fenwick has mentioned and what exactly, how they operate. And it's a little bit of a concern for me on what those would be replaced with.
Rebecca Fenwick, happy to see this building getting attention, and I am, hear the comments related to the affordable nature of this property, and I think that's an important consideration and argument. I do think, however, that we can't make exceptions, and this is in particular, a quite significant historic building, but we can't necessarily, pick and choose which historic buildings have to follow the window related items of the ordinance. And for that reason, this building will continue to have single pane wood true divided light windows. So that being said, moving forward from there, there are options to tackle some of those hard issues related to efficiency, et cetera. Interior storms, windows is one example, but there are other efficiency measures, so can get creative in other ways. And I would explore that.
Pam Miller, I'm very familiar with Mercy Housing and the good work they do, and also with how tight their budget is and those kinds of things. So while I can agree with you that maintenance will be an issue, could be an issue down the road because of funding, I also know this is a historic building, and if we were here voting basically on the merits of Mercy Housing, I would say, you know, put in whatever, but we're not. So, you know, I think that we need to look at what would be the best for them, but also to maintain the integrity of the history of the building. So I'd like to see the options more than just what we have today. So.
May Boley, could we even approve an unapproved window? Okay. All right, just clarifying that. Thank you. No other comments. I hold with the rest of the board. I totally empathize. These are comments. Sorry. I totally empathize with the applicant, but I agree. This would be a very notable, significant, large, and visible exception that would create a lot of, I think, inconsistency in our mission. So I'm inclined to agree with staff.
Any further comments from the board? Hearing none, I'm going to call for a motion.
Jamie, would you put up staff recommendations, please? Thank you. This is May Boley. I move that we approve the request for rehabilitation alterations for the property located at 644 West 36th Street with staff condition.
Could we, discussion on the motion, could we add the salvage of the windows?
Sure.
Is that as a recommendation?
As a condition?
Condition.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. To amend your motion?
Amend my motion. And I make a motion to approve the request for rehabilitation and alterations to the property located at 644 West 36th Street with staff condition and an additional condition that the windows be salvaged for reuse rather than destroyed in the demolition and removal.
We got a second.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Ann Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Motion passes. Now we will move on to 700 West 35th Street. Rehabilitation and alterations.
This is Jamie Zarella presenting staff recommendation for 700 West 35th Street. This is a similar scope of work. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitations and alterations. That includes repaired damaged window sashes and replace glass, replace non-historic windows with aluminum clad windows, remove section of brick course at header for each new lintel replacement, replace wood railings, trim, paint metal stair, refurbish, replace exterior door panel. And for context, this building was constructed in 1929. It is a contributing building in the Kyler Brownville Local Historic District. Of note is that at the time of the 1994 survey, the building was considered vacant and not used, so there was probably some material lost at that point. And I'll just scroll through these pictures. And I'll pull up their elevations because I had questions about the light configurations prior. So, but staff only has one comment, and it's the same as the previous petition, which was to utilize wood windows as opposed to the aluminum clad windows, which that forms our one condition. But with that condition, we recommend approval. I'll take any questions you have as staff.
Any Any questions for staff? Hearing none, would the petitioner like to step forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Patrick Shea with Gunmeyer Hoff Shea Architects, and the same kudos to Meredith and Latoya and Mercy Housing. How do I get, it's back up now, okay. So this one's a little trickier than the other ones, and that's because you see here there are three buildings. One of them is the historic Florence Street School that was just presented to you, and two of them are actually buildings that were built about 20 years ago, and they look exactly like these, all right? So they're also part of this petition. So what I would like to ask is, another mitigating circumstance is that in 2017, a petition was put forward and approved by this board after a variance, so that a certain number of the windows in the Florence Street School, the historic building, were in fact replaced already with the aluminum clad windows that we had proposed for both historic buildings. That's how we started down this path in the first place, is we were told that it had already been approved and that, you know, this was what we ought to do. Obviously I was wrong about that, but now we have the dilemma of, it's about maybe 20-25% of the windows on the existing building are already aluminum clad windows. And the desire from Mercy Housing is that we replace all of the older windows with newer windows that match the ones that are already in the historic building. So that's one dilemma. And then the other one is that the two new buildings, they just have like vinyl windows that are non-historic because they're not even 20, well, they're a little over 20 years old. We also would like to replace all those because they're kind of a hot mess. And we'd like to be able to use the windows that we've proposed, being the aluminum clad wood windows for those. They're solid vinyl windows. So this one's a little more complicated than the first one, and I appreciate your deliberations on the first one. Again, I'd like to ask that we be allowed to consider, or at least to ask you to consider, if we could match the windows that have already been replaced with the kind of windows that have been proposed on the Florence Street School, but definitely not make us keep the vinyl windows on the two more modern buildings. Allow us at the very least to replace those. And I got a text while I was just after you asked the question, and I felt it, but I didn't look at it. And it immediately came up casements. They're existing casement windows. So that came from the people that surveyed the inside of the building. So they've seen them, you know, from the inside. History. That's the charity hospital building. Although there are some very large windows here on the Florence Street School as well. So I just would like for you to allow us to differ from the staff recommendation in that we would prefer to use the modern windows to match the modern windows that are already in the Florence Street School. Failing that, we'll fall back and maybe go do what they did last time, is get the variance first and then come back here. I don't know. We'll have to probably talk to an attorney about that. But at the very least, please, please let us get rid of those vinyl windows that are on the non-historic buildings. Thank you.
Any questions for the petitioner?
What question for staff, or I don't know, whomever, but you know, this group didn't exist in 2017, and it's curious, you know, how the aluminum windows got approved for the historic building. And then a follow-up question, do we allow vinyl on new construction in local districts also?
I don't know anything about this project previously. I had no idea there were aluminum. Okay, it was Ellen and Sarah Farr. A variance was granted. Oh, variance was granted. So it looks like they went to ZBA first.
Right.
Which,
and then this is the color blue.
Yeah, which is not the path anymore.
Right. And the new building with the vinyl, I mean.
I don't know. That one was in the 90s. So it,
What year was?
This is a 98. This district was in 98.
Oh, okay.
So it's possible.
It could have been before the district was established. Yeah.
Or that the standard wasn't in there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Kyler Brownville allows PVC, but not vinyl.
So. Okay. Does it allow aluminum?
Aluminum clad.
So in that respect, we could look at approving the new building with aluminum clad.
Yep.
Now, the dilemma being is that it already has aluminum clad. And the question before the board is, do they have to apply for a variance to get the rest of it as an aluminum clad to be in like kind with that fascia?
On the historic building?
On the, well, yeah. It's, well, because it already has aluminum clad on the one side. Does that mean that now you've got 50-50? What?
If you're going to touch it, then you have to follow the ordinance standards for historic buildings.
So they would have to maintain the wood on that with the current standard. But the new building, you would be able to put in the windows that you like. Yeah.
Well, with your permission, because of visual compatibility. Yes.
Right. So that would be, that's the question.
And clarification, if I could, while I have the expert, the variance process that was used 7 years ago or 6 years ago is no longer the right way to do it. Go to ZBA first and then come to this board in its earlier life. That is now a special exception, and that would only come from this board. Right. So that would be your ability to grant us a special exception if you wanted to on the Florence Street School.
Thank you, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Any members from the public like to make any comment at this point?
And I don't know if that was a question of staff. Did you have questions for me or the others?
I have one.
Please.
I'm sorry if you already mentioned it, but how many of the windows in the school have been replaced with these vinyl? I mean, aluminum clad?
I think it's about 20%.
About 20%. Thank you.
Kirsten Connor, I had a quick question.
Yes.
And I might be missing it, but what are the steel lintels that are being taken out?
So the brick has old iron or steel lintels that were used to support the brick, and they're completely rusted out. So we're going to replace those for structural reasons.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right.
We're good for him now. Thank you. Any public comment at this moment in time? Hearing none, I'll open it up for board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, I would be inclined to definitely allow them on the newer build from the 90s to go with the aluminum clad as proposed. As far as the historic building, with only 20% of the windows having been replaced already, I would still be more inclined to recommend that they replace with wood for the windows they plan to replace.
Rebecca Fenwick, I agree. And again, if they wanted to keep the ones they have, they can. They just don't need to touch those. That's the point, right? Is if you're touching something, it's kind of like the code thing, right? If you start down that path, then you got to follow the rules, but that are currently in place. I had another point. I lost it. It's okay.
Pam Miller, I tend to agree with the newer building to do the aluminum clad, but the historic building to do the wood replacement.
Mabel Lee, I agree. Please replace those vinyl windows. Thank you.
Can you put staff recommendations back up? That's what I was going to ask. So perhaps maybe there was just like a miss on the new builds, the two non-historic. Okay, got it. So we'll just add that as a condition. Correct. Okay. Rebecca Fenwick, I motion we approve the request for rehab and alterations at 700 West 35th Street with staff recommendations to include a second condition, which is to allow for the use of aluminum clad windows in the two younger buildings on the parcel.
Kirsten Connor, I second. Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
May Bowley, approve.
Motion passes.
Kirsten Connor, I did have a quick question from our previous, the other building. With those casement windows, is there anything in what we approved that would recommend either replacing with casement or keeping them?
They were proposed to be replaced in kind.
In kind, okay.
Kind. And frankly, keeping all the windows is now something that we'll have to strongly consider.
Okay.
Even though they're relatively low performance windows. As an architect, that's unfortunate, but as a preservationist, that I understand.
Got it. Well, then thank you for answering that. And also I recommend just reaching out to professionals in the area, and maybe they can suggest some things to make these windows more efficient that are inexpensive options. But thank you so much for your presentation.
And thank you. I mean, it's an interesting dilemma, we'll continue. It's going to be, these buildings are going to get another 20 to 30 years of life as a consequence of this. It's all good.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, next item on the agenda, 203 West 35th Street, rehabilitation and alterations.
All right. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting 203 West 35th Street. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation and alterations of the front porch and enclosing a side staircase for the property located at 203 West 35th Street. Work includes in-kind material replacement for porch elements such as the columns, railing, roof, and cornice, as well as changing the altered door and window configuration of the entrance. Masonry beneath the surface is failing due to failing supports under the porch. Some repointing may be necessary, and some concrete that is visible will need repair. The other portion of the project includes enclosing an exterior side staircase for safety and water infiltration issues that contributed to the porch detaching from the house in 2021. The applicant intends to repurpose as much of the material as possible. So I'll just kind of show the applicants provided some information from their previous request in 2021, where they had some issues where they did have to have the porch deconstructed. We've got some before and afters. This one is just a Google Street View. And then this is how it currently looks today. We'll just add also the staircase in question is not original to this house. For the applicant, regarding the side stair enclosure, rather than reinstall this visually awkward addition, we are proposing to fully enclose the stairs on the side of the house and move the second floor entry door to the base of the stairs and at the front porch. So for some historical context and background, 203 West 35th Street was built circa 1900 and is a contributing resource within the National Register Thomas Square Streetcar Historic District and the local streetcar district. It appears that this property has undergone some alterations over the years and has been referred to under three addresses, 203 and 203 and a half West 35th Street and 1905 Barnard Street, indicating it was a multifamily residence at some point. The first Sanborn map the building appears on is 1916, which includes the 203 West 35th and 1905 Barnard Street addresses. The addition of the 203 and a half isn't seen until the 1937 cadastral map. For the applicant, the property was converted to a duplex after the original homeowners sold the home and moved from the area. In creating a separate entry for the second floor, the main staircase in the first floor entry was removed, and stairs were installed on the side of the house to install a new door at the landing of the original stairs. A sloping roof line was also installed at the time. And of the new entry area to the existing front porch roof. Overall, staff did find that this project is visually compatible and meets the standards, but did have some recommendations for some of the project elements. The applicant is proposing to remove the non-historic windows flanking the door. Let me get back to a picture of that. With double doors that are aligned with the transom, although the entrance has been altered, it appears that the original door is still in place, but the two windows flanking the door replace two side lights that would have been aligned with the transom above the door. Staff recommends instead that the original door be maintained and include the return of the side lights rather than the new double doors. The historic context of this configuration can be seen throughout the block on many contributing resources within the area. With regard to the staircase enclosure, staff had a few recommendations. There is a second story historic window, show kind of right here, that would be obscured by the project, and a smaller new window proposed to be installed to fit with the change. The staff recommends incorporating this window into the design to prevent it from becoming obscured. There's also a new square window proposed in the new enclosure wall, and in order to fit the ordinance, it could be redesigned so that it's taller rather than, or so it's taller than it is wide. To avoid presenting a false sense of history by adding the same width of horizontal wood siding, staff had the recommendation to instead use a wider board so the enclosure doesn't blend in as an original feature. Staff also is in need of product specifications to review for the materials proposed in this project. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request for the front porch the porch restoration and the side stair enclosure for the property located at 203 West 35th Street with the following conditions to be provided for staff review and approval because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, retain the original entry door using the transom as a guide for original opening and reinstall the side lights rather than set of double doors. Two, incorporate the original existing second floor window into the stair enclosure design so that it does not become obscured. Three, provide product specifications regarding the windows, doors, siding, roof, concrete, and mortar. Four, use a different size of horizontal wood siding and access door for the enclosure to differentiate the old and the new, and to avoid creating a false sense of history. And five, redesign the square window in the enclosure wall to be taller than it is wide in order to meet the ordinance. Thanks, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
So, Rebecca Fenwick, that window, you're proposing that they just retain it and have the addition partially cover it. Is that, am I interpreting correctly?
Yes, or as to keep as much of it as visible as possible.
But, I mean, I realize we don't have interior purview, but we're essentially saying, like, please leave the window in place, right?
So, right. Well, just because of the standard about not obscuring historic features was the reasoning for that.
But, it's, but you know, as proposed, it will, correct?
I mean, correct.
Okay.
Anybody else have any questions?
This is May Boley. The bump out that the tall bump out, the bigger one that currently exists on the building, was that determined to be added when the building was split into a duplex, and or was that original?
We can look at the Sanborns. I mean, if this was built 1900, we can't really tell for sure because you know, 15-ish years later, this footprint may have been altered already by then.
Sure. But we could say definitively that bump out was there at least within the first 15 years of the building existing. Cool.
And the applicants may be able to, just having the interior perspective, tell a little more about that too.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, well, the petition would like to step forward and present to the board. Please state your names for the record.
Christopher Failing, 203 West 35th Street.
I'm Jamie Failing, 203 West 35th Street.
Thank you.
And one comment I'd like to make. I accidentally sent the original version of the draft that showed a much higher pitch slope on the front porch, which was resolved. You'll see, and there's a modification elevation that shows more flat pitch. So it is flat pitch roof that's being replaced.
Thank you.
At this point, don't really have any arguments against the recommendations. We are going to work on trying to redesign that enclosure slope and connection point to allow that double window to be the double hung window to exist, and have no problem putting in a double hung on the side either.
Okay. Do any of our board members have any questions for the petitioners? Hearing none. Any members from the public like to make any comment at this point? No, then I'll open it for board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, if the applicants are in agreement with working with staff on their recommendations, then I would like to agree with MPC staff.
Rebecca Fenwick, I second that.
Matt Miller, I third that.
May Boley, love to see it. Glad to see this porch get put back on. I love that you've added another column to that long span, which was bad. Looks great. Godspeed.
Any further comments from the board? Let's put, somebody put forward a motion, please.
May Boley move to, or motion to approve staff's, oh, sorry, I'm just going to wait for it.
Yeah, let me get that back.
Motion to approve the request for porch restoration and the side stair enclosure for the property located at 203 West 35th Street, including all of staff's conditions.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
Can I get a vote?
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Ann Miller, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is 117 West 42nd Street.
This is Jamie Zarella presenting the staff recommendation for 117 West 42nd Street. The applicant is requesting approval for new construction part one, just height and mass, at 117 West 42nd Street in order to construct a two-story mixed-use building along with a two-story accessory building proposed along West 43rd Street. So a little bit of context here. Currently, it's an unimproved lot, and it's located between two streets here, which is important for the ADU standards that I'll get into. So it's a similar situation as to what we heard previously with the previous ADU. Is that it's bounded by 42nd and 43rd Street. Historically, in the past, this was an unpaved lane, but it was paved over and turned into a street, which is pretty common in this area of streetcar, kind of just a few blocks north of Victory, where you don't really have any service lanes. It's just paved streets. Going forward. Oops. The proposed site plan here. Staff had a few comments, and they're primarily to do with the site. Particularly the first one is the building separation, which, again, similar to the previously heard ADU, it's at 9 feet and 2 inches, which is required to be 10 feet. So staff is recommending that the petitioner increase that distance between the principal building and the accessory dwelling unit. In addition, there is an issue with the side, with the west side yard setback, wherein that it is not meeting the standard. Let me pull it up real quick. Sorry. Is not meeting the standard. However, staff finds that it's visually compatible. So we're recommending a variance recommending that they apply for a variance recommendation request, which they can't do at this meeting, but apply for the next meeting.
Okay. So again, we're going to go to the similar fold here. If we can speak to the petitioner at this point, because if there's a variance that needs to be applied and the staff recommendations, we've got two more items on the agenda and we've got about 20 minutes to wrap it up in. So if we can speak to her about that and her, the willingness to look at the staff recommendations and what we all, and then come back with a variance next month, that would probably be better.
I believe the applicant might be online. Yes. Oh, right there. Oh, sorry.
Good afternoon, Liv Garcia with Brown Design Studio.
Can we pull up the recommendations? Just, I know that, I've kind of put it the cart before the horse, but.
So two really quick comments that we have. One, regarding the overhang of the eaves, it's currently at 24 inches, so we can just show that in the next set of drawings. That's an easy fix. Okay. One thing that we did have a question to staff about is regarding the comment number three, include a private sidewalk that connects the main entrance of the principal structure to the public sidewalk. In the set that we submitted, our last page includes a landscaping plan, which shows the surrounding area being completely paved in hardscape, which would essentially extend the sidewalk. Is that acceptable or yes? Okay, perfect. So that gets rid of three. Perfect. All right.
So what else have we got? Then there's a couple of variances that we need to work on, right?
Can you say that one more time?
You have the variances that you have to apply for separately. So would you all be willing to continue this to the next meeting?
Could we do part one and two in the next meeting?
With the variance, it would all be included together. So rather than go over it twice.
Okay.
I know you've waited all afternoon. I wish we'd have known this. We could have,
it's all good.
We could have expedited the process a little bit, but yes.
Yeah, we're okay with that.
You'd be willing to do that? Can we have a motion from the board?
Rebecca Fenwick, I motion we continue the project at 117 West 42nd Street.
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Call for a vote.
Can you continue to a date certain?
Oh,
to the next meeting.
Kirsten Connor, I second that.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
May Bully, approve.
Kirsten, you got a vote. You just second it. You.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda, 111 Brady Street.
Good evening, this is Caitlin Chamberlain again, presenting 111 Brady Street. This is a similar situation to the last one that just came through where there is a variance recommendation at the end.
Okay, so let's pull it up and have a look at it and you can see what it is.
Is there somebody here?
Is the petitioner here? For 111 Brady Street?
No. They might be online, but it's AD Collaboration.
Heather Spigner?
No.
Why don't we ask if there's anybody online for that petition to raise their hand,
yes,
and then that way we'll know.
Okay, so is there anybody online that is a petitioner for 111 Brady Street? Could you raise your hand virtually?
All right. Looks like maybe we don't have anybody representing that right now.
Okay, so we can't really review that even with a variance, can we?
It's going to have to come back anyway for the variance.
So let's again, if there's nobody there,
Rebecca Fenwick, I motion we continue the project at 111 Brady Street to date certain next meeting.
May Boley second.
Kirsten Connor approve.
Rebecca Fenwick approve. Pam Miller approve.
May Boley approve.
For president.
Finally, 1508 Montgomery Street, new construction smalls, part 1-2.
Good evening. This is Caitlin Chamberlain again. The applicant is requesting approval for a new construction small parts 1 and 2 project for a 3-story mixed-use building on an empty lot at 1508 Montgomery Street. The proposed building will house commercial spaces on the first floor, 2 residential units on the second floor, and 1 residential unit and a roof terrace on the third floor. A 40-space parking lot is also proposed as part of this project. Half of the spaces were approved by the Zoning Board of Appeals as an off-site parking location for another new construction project at 1825 Montgomery Street. And then just to give the show y'all quickly the proposed elevations of this building. So 1508 Montgomery Street is currently an empty lot, and it's in an area that's both residential and commercial. The lot is surrounded by both contributing and non-contributing resources. There are wood frame single-family homes, non-contributing commercial buildings, and a new construction apartment complex, the Low, all within the vicinity of the lot of the proposed project. So just to kind of... Sorry. For the applicant, the site is located at the corner of Montgomery and 31st Lane, adjacent to a single-story historic residence, which is this yellow structure here. The lot extends the full length of the lane to Jefferson Street. To the south across the lane is a single-story non-contributing commercial building with a front parking lot. Across the street is a newly constructed full-block, 4-story multifamily building. The proposed building is designed with a corner orientation adjacent to the lane with a lower 2-story portion of the building to transition down the scale of the neighborhood, the neighboring single-story residence. Staff found the majority of the project to be visually compatible and meeting the standards, but there were a few items staff did have comments about. There are windows proposed for the third floor that are either square or rectangular in shape. But since the ordinance states that the windows must be taller than they are wide, there is a recommendation to redesign them to fit within this standard. Also for the windows, information is needed to show that the muntins will be 7/8 of an inch or less. With regard to the proposed doors, the specifications were provided for the Marvin outswing French doors, showing the exterior door material is fiberglass, which is not a permitted material, but the drawings note aluminum doors, which is also not a permitted material. Staff recommends that the applicant selects a door type with an approved material. And then exterior lighting is shown on the drawings, but specifics about the proposed light fixtures would still be needed. Within the standards for parking and paving, it is stated that new construction needs to include a private sidewalk that connects the main entrance of the principal structure to the public sidewalk, so staff is recommending that the applicant provides this information, including the material type. And lastly, this is a minor detail, the plans meet the standard about parking lots over 30 feet in length, needing to include a 36-inch high wall around the perimeter of the lot. However, the stucco column height is proposed to be 8'3" from ground level. So to meet the maximum height of 8 feet, staff is recommending the height is just lowered to meet that standard. And with that, staff recommends to approve the request for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for the vacant lot at 1508 Montgomery Street with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for review and approval because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. 1, redesign the square third-story windows to meet the standard of being taller than they are wide. Provide information showing that the window muntins will be 7/8 of an inch or less. Select a door type with an approved material. Provide product specs for the exterior lighting. provide information about the private sidewalk connecting to the public sidewalk, including the material, and just lower the height of the stucco columns of the parking lot wall from 8'3" to 8 feet even to meet the ordinance. Thanks, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Rebecca Fenwick, the building is shorter on one end and taller on the other. Is the shorter end on the north end?
Let's take a look. Let me get back up to...
Yeah, so I'm going to just look underneath. It probably says what street that is. Yes.
Oh, it's tiny. I missed it. This is the north elevation.
Right. Okay. So then the taller portion is on the lane. Is that right? Am I interpreting
correctly? I believe
so. Okay. That's my question. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Hearing none, the petitioner would like to step forward, please, and state their name for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Becky Lynch with Lynch Associates Architects, and it's truly a miracle that you made it to the last item on the agenda, or at least the regular agenda. We are happy to comply with all of staff's recommendations, but I did want to make the clarification that the windows on the third floor are taller than they are wide. They're 4 feet tall and 3'4" wide. And right now, they're based on a consistent head height and keeping the sill above the band. So it would be, we would have to narrow them up if you wanted to change the proportion, but we'd probably have to narrow up all the windows to make it cohesive. But I would say technically they do, there's not a 5-to-3 ratio in this area, so they should meet the ordinance. And regarding the private sidewalk, that was something that we had not noted in the guidelines. Right now we're showing a small landscaped area connecting the main sidewalk to the parking area, but that could easily be paved and we would just match the sidewalk material for that private sidewalk, which leads back to the gate.
What's the width of that? Sorry to interrupt.
It is, sorry, I can't see it here. It's right now 3 feet, which is the setback.
Okay.
But we would be happy to make any of these adjustments and would be even happier if we could submit any of these changes to staff if you were to approve our project today.
So, Rebecca Fenwick, have you talked to any of the neighbors specifically about this project?
I cannot answer that definitively one way or the other.
Okay. My thought, just for everyone's edification, you know, not solely you're not creating the problem, but it's like the one-story houses that are adjacent to the very large complex that has just come to the north. I'm just thinking about how this is all going to be in the round. So that was why I asked the question.
It was intended that this would be a smaller scale building as it is surrounded by a number of larger new development full block buildings in the area. But that was why we made the two-story portion adjacent to the one-story contributing single-family home as opposed to the other way around.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the petitioner? Hearing none, is there any members of the public that would like to make any comments? No? Okay. Hearing none, I will open it up for board discussion.
Could staff put the elevations back up? Just one street facing. Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
So like I said, the last one is going to be somewhat hidden from view, correct? Right. The parking lot. And that the parking lot has not been built yet. Yeah. No. Wow. And that, the parking lot staff that came from outside of this approval process, correct?
Yeah, it was a ZBA approval from 2021 to be accessory parking for another building at 1825 Montgomery.
It's going to have a huge impact on the neighborhood. Not part of this deliberation. So. I don't know that I take any major issue with the building, Rebecca Fenwick.
I have to say to the petitioner, I do appreciate the fact that the step down, that even that consideration shows some sympathy for the neighborhood, and I really appreciate that. Thank you. So, any further discussion by the board?
No, I had the same thought, that it's evident that there was effort to not completely disregard the one-story building next door. And I was just on street view doing the same thing I think you're thinking about. And, you know, you can see the two-story historic buildings from this corner along Jefferson. So it does feel, I think, especially with the big developments around there. But I was curious for staff, what's the height limit for this location? And then what is the tallest point on this proposed building, just for my curiosity?
I don't know the top of my head, but I think I put it, or if
sure it's in there.
I think I have it in here, or if you just
my apologies.
I believe it's 3 stories, 45 feet.
Uh-huh. Okay.
3 stories, 45 feet. And then the building is 37 feet.
Okay. Right. All right. Thank you very much. I also, you know, there's nothing there. It'll be good to have something there. Yeah.
Are we all ready to entertain a motion, folks?
May Bowley, motion to approve the request for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for the vacant lot at 1508 Montgomery with all of staff's conditions.
Pam Miller, I second.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve. Pam Miller, approve.
May Bowley, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve. All right. Good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
We got a few more minutes.
Yeah, let's go through the last part of the. So thank you to the petitioners and members of the public for your time and interest in strengthening your community. We will now move on to approved staff reviews. A list of staff reviews is attached to the agenda. Are there any questions of the staff regarding the approved staff reviews? So as a board, we agree to a vote for an acknowledgement of the approved staff reviews.
There was a question.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, please do. Please step forward and state your name. Of course. This is an unusual precedent, so thank you.
sorry about this. I've been here for about 3.5 hours now.
Appreciate your patience. Thank you.
So my name is Tucker Wesson. I'm the market development manager with Empower Solar. Mm-hmm. I'm here representing 308 East 41st Street. That was supposed to be on the agenda today. So I think there's been some kind of oversight. Really?
Yeah, I told Jesse that was on.
What is that? I don't know what that means. This is my first time doing this.
It means
I apologize.
There was no presentation. It was just all approved in a group of other.
Oh, was that listed out loud?
Yeah.
I completely missed that, I guess.
You sat here all day.
I'm so sorry that you spent the entire afternoon with us.
Yeah. I mean, I have a newfound appreciation for what you guys do. I'm exhausted now. I'm going to go home and take a nap.
At number 7, Jesse Adams.
Perfect. All right. Thank you.
No, but congratulations that you've reached that milestone.
I appreciate it, you guys. Thank you.
It's always good news, Chris. Okay. So, is there any discussion regarding staff reviews? No, hearing none. Can we acknowledge that we are all approved staff reviews? Yeah?
Rebecca Fenwick, I motion to acknowledge the staff reviews.
Kirsten Connor, I second.
And we don't need to take a vote on that. So, any notices, proclamations, move on to other business. Is there any additional board business to be discussed today?
Meeting adjourned.
No?
Not for me.
Okay, so with that, can we have a motion to adjourn?
Faye Boley, motion to adjourn.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
All right, we're done.